Welcome everybody to Mundo Albi Celeste's podcast. I am your host for today, Roy. Sadly, Seba is unable to join us for this podcast due to some personal reasons. I am, however, joined by John in Malaysia. John, how are you?
How are you, Roy? I'm doing fine, and looks like it's the end of the year, and pretty sure, I guess, we have a lot to talk about, especially of what took place in 2009, because this podcast is all about season greeting. It's a season greetings podcast.
Definitely. And yeah, you are right. There is a lot to talk about, especially if you want to talk about 2009 in general. But first, let's start off with the Catalonia match, which is being played on Tuesday, tomorrow. Just a quick rundown. From what I've been reading, Pablo Aimar and Christian Ansaldi are both injured for the match, which brings our tally to 4 injuries and 1 player unable to make it. Those 4 players are Alvarez, Max Rodriguez, Pablo Aimar, Javi Mascherano, and Sergio Aguero. So those 5 will not take part in the match. Aside from Datolo and Banega and Pastor, that's pretty much it. No new call-ups. John, what about you? How would you go with the formation, the lineup?
Well, I haven't been following much about this friendly match against Catalonia because I seriously believe that it's pretty much a irrelevant game, more of a formality sake. Well, the goalkeepers, I'm not so sure whether is Anduja going to make the trip to Catalonia, but if he does, I guess he will be starting as the number one choice. As for the defense, I got a feeling that Emiliano Papa will be starting on the left, and pretty much maybe Pareja on the right with Demichelis and Otamendi in the central defense. What about you? I mean, what's your prediction about the goalkeepers and defenders?
Well, goalkeepers, Andujar has played before with the national team. I think Diego's going to do what he did with the Ghana match, which is use one goalkeeper for every half. So I could see Andujar playing the first half and Diego Pozzo playing the second, or vice versa. As for defenders, I think you're right. We will see Emiliano Papa on the left, probably Otamendi, Demichelis in the middle, and Christian Alvarez on the right. Personally, for me, I've seen very, very, very little of Alvarez, but I've heard good things about him. So it'll be interesting to see how he does. Midfield, this is tricky. Probably with Mascherano out, I could see Gago getting the nod ahead of Ever Banega. So probably Gago Bolatti as the defensive midfielders, and Di Maria Datolo as the wingers. What about you, John?
Yeah, pretty much the same. I would say definitely Di Maria, and Di Maria will start in one of the wingers. Of course, my choice is going to be Jesus Datolo, the other one. And in central midfielder, I'm going to go with Gago and Bolatti. But it's a shame that Ever Banega is not going to get the nod because he has been playing extremely well for Valencia this season especially.
Oh, Banega has been playing really, really well. But yeah, obviously this is what we think is going to be the starting lineup and not what we would like to be the starting lineup. Forward-wise up front, I don't see Messi starting this match. I could see him coming off the bench but not starting, which is why I have a feeling we will see Higuain and Ezequiel Lavezzi up front. I don't know about you, John, but that's how I see it. I can't see Palermo starting either.
Well, you never know how crazy can Diego get when it comes to team selection. So it could be, in my opinion, I would say it's Palermo and Lavezzi. But of course, I want Gonzalo Higuain to start ahead of Palermo because if he can get a couple of more goals to his credit with the national team, that can only improve his performance and personally his confidence as well whenever he gets a chance to play for the national team in the future. By the way, speaking of Lionel Messi, I mean, considering the fact that would they be able to make it on time for this game? And what about match fitness and all that?
Well, I don't know, match fitness. He looked good against Estudiantes, so he looked good there. But yeah, because he will be making the trip from Switzerland, because the World Player of the Year gala is being held today on Monday. So I mean, it's what? How long of a flight is it from Switzerland to Spain? 2 hours, 3 hours tops. He would be able to make it, but I don't know. Match fitness, he's fit, but I don't know. I think Maradona would like to try up someone else aside from Messi to play along with Higuain. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's how I see it.
Well, another name that I'm also keen to see getting a chance to play for the national team is Javier Pastore, a young up-and-coming star for the for Argentina. Not necessarily for the national team, because I think he's still quite way behind the pecking order when you take into consideration of all the other senior players that are regularly being called up for the national team. But this is one guy that I'm really keen to see how well he will do when he wears the Argentina shirt.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I've seen a few matches of Pastore this year in Italy. Not a lot, but a few. From what I've seen, I've liked what I've seen. And this would be the perfect opportunity to give someone like Pastore, you know, his first start with the national team. I'm not talking about giving him 20, 25 minutes and then subbing him off. I'm talking about giving him a full 90, or at the very least 75 minutes, see how he does, see if he's able to control the tempo of the game. Same thing for Banega, Ever Banega. There's no point of starting Fernando Gago. I mean, when was the last time Gago even played? If I'm not mistaken, it was against Spain, which was about a month and a half ago. For me, I would play Banega with Bolatti and Pastore in the playmaking role. But with Diego, like you said, you can never know.
Yeah. I mean, considering the fact that Gago is also pretty much way behind the pecking order in Real Madrid, it doesn't make sense for me that he's still there in the national team. I mean, the guy has a lot of talent. The guy is gifted. But it's just that when you're not playing regular football for your club, it doesn't make any sense to me that you've been called up for the national team.
Well, definitely it makes no sense. But with Diego, nothing makes sense. And the problem with Gago is that when he came to Madrid, expectations were really high. Expectations were high. You know, people were saying, oh, he's going to be the next Redondo. They play in the same position. They look alike. But it never worked out for him. And I think ever since he left Boca to go to Madrid, he never really... he never progressed that much in terms of talent. He got several minutes. He was a regular last season. But now, if he's smart, he just has to get the hell out of Dodge, get out of Madrid, go anywhere but England, go to Germany, go to Italy, stay in Spain, go to a different team. But get out of Madrid. And you're right, there's no reason why Gago should be called up at the moment, especially with the way Banega. Excuse me, especially with the way Banega has been playing.
Mm-hmm. And what about Eduardo Salvio? Because if I can recall that, although we had a very disastrous South American Youth Championship, in which I mean it's very sad to say that we actually failed to qualify for the World Youth Cup, but he was arguably our best player during that few months there.
Yeah, Salvio as well is called up to the list. But, yeah, you're definitely right about him being our best player in the 2009 South American Youth Championships. I would even say he was better than Insua, the left back who captained the Argentina team. He showed skill, creativity, a bit too selfish for my liking, a bit too selfish, but that's something that obviously his coaches could work on. I could see him getting a few minutes here and there, maybe for Di Maria, maybe for Datolo on the wing. It would be nice to see him, you know, get a better match than the match that he played against Panama, because the match against Panama was... I don't even think it was televised in Argentina itself. I'm probably wrong on that. I'm pretty sure it was. But, yeah, it would be good to give him a match against harder opponents, because Catalonia has called up several Barcelona players, Xavi, Victor Valdez, Carles Puyol, Gerard Piqué. So there's a lot of Barcelona players there. Whether any of them start or play the full 90, that's another question. But I would like to see how he would fare against tougher opponents.
All right. Now, I mean, we know that Catalonia is definitely not recognized by FIFA as a legitimate national team in that sense. How much input can we actually take from this friendly game? I mean, your opinion.
Well, my opinion, look, if you give the young guys a chance, I think it could be positive. But if you try and play your, if you try and go all out and you play your strongest lineup, I mean, if you play Messi, Higuain, and you play Di Maria, Pablo Aimar, had he not been injured, and Mascherano and everything, then it's useless. There's no point. This is the type of match where I think it's good for young players. Build up their confidence, see how they do on the international level, even if the match has no meaning whatsoever, just for them to get a taste to see how it feels like to play for the national team, senior national team. I think it could go good if players like Pastore, if players like Banega could get decent minutes. I don't know about you, but that's how I see it.
Okay. I mean, I personally, I would definitely look at the Catalonia list as a very respectable lineup, considering the number of players from Barca. And on top of that, you also got players from former Barca players from Ajax, Olego and Gabri. Well, in that
Yeah,
sense,
well,
yeah, go ahead.
no, because you mentioned Oleguer was his last few seasons with Barcelona. He was pretty bad. It's nothing to write home about him. But yeah, you're definitely right.
So I guess we can also say that this is could be in another way an Argentina versus Spain part two, and I have to admit that I was pretty surprised the way we responded in that game against Spain, because we know our strength, especially with the national team under Diego so far in 2009, and to play against a very respectable a top team like Spain the way we gave them a run for their money. I think there's something to shout about, in my opinion.
Oh no, you're absolutely right. I mean, with all the negativity going around, and I know we haven't always been positive concerning Diego and his lists. Look, the match against Spain put out their A plus side. A plus, everyone was there. Casillas was there, Puyol was there, Xavi was there. I mean, everyone minus Torres. Everyone minus Fernando Torres was there. And for us, it was more of a B minus C side, and we only lost by one goal, which was a penalty, with 10 minutes remaining. So the first half they definitely outplayed us. Second half I think we did a little bit better than them, and we didn't play absolutely terrible. I mean, I was expecting us to just get murdered in that match, and we didn't. We more than held our own, even with the team that Diego put out. So there is some light at the end of the tunnel. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, now let's move on to the next segment in our podcast. And of course, it has been a very, very interesting weekend for fans of Argentina, especially when the subject matter is all about Lionel Messi. And what a weekend it was for him. I mean, not only that he helped Barca to collect their sixth trophy out of six championship which they participated in 2009. On top of that he also seems to be making a habit of collecting a personal award for himself, in which he was named as the tournament best player. And I'm not so sure about you, Roy, but what was your reaction for this whole weekend, especially when it comes to Lionel Messi?
The kid steps up for big games, you know. Congratulations to Barcelona. Congratulations for Messi. No doubt about it, the best team in the world, bar none. No one could touch them at the moment. Concerning Messi, same thing as Barcelona, best player in the world. No one can touch him at the moment. Xavi's a close second, but for me, he's still number one. That's just another list of accomplishments on Messi's list right now, and just another trophy. Hopefully leading up to the big one in next summer in June, July 2010. But no, definitely you have to say 2009 belongs to Lionel Messi and no one else. 38, 39 goals last season, the treble, and now the three other trophies in this season. There's no doubt about it. This kid, is the best player in the world and probably will be for quite some time. And the sad part is, John, and I'm pretty sure you will agree with me on this one, is the pure hatred coming from Argentina fans, not Estudiantes fans in particular, but Argentina fans. The pure hatred going on against Lionel Messi because he never played in Argentina, because of the way he celebrated against Estudiantes. I don't know if you saw it, but there were pictures in the media in Argentina where they pretty much people spray painted the word Messi and Puto beside it, and that's just really disrespectful. It's a joke. The kid plays for Barcelona. He plays in Europe. It's his first time against an Argentine club. He's playing against Estudiantes. He has no personal connection to them. He just scored the game winner for his team in extra time. Let the kid celebrate. Let him enjoy his moment. There's no point of bashing him whatsoever.
Yeah, definitely I have to agree with you. And in some ways, I'm somewhat surprised about this sort of reaction coming from fans of Argentina. And somehow or other, I think it's pretty much the misunderstanding or the lack of understanding about the difference between a national team and club football. For me personally, I sometimes feel sorry for Messi when it comes to playing for Argentina. And I feel sorry for him because the fact that every time when he wears the national team jersey, there is a whole amount of expectation that he needs to emulate pretty much exactly as what Diego Maradona has done for the national team. I'm not saying that Messi is not capable of doing that. I mean, he is pretty much, in every sense, the right guy to succeed Diego for the number 10 jersey. I mean, we were looking at a lot of names in the past 20 years to really succeed that number 10 jersey, but never anyone came close to that. And I think the only player that I truly believe that has every right, a divine right in my opinion, to really succeed that jersey is Lionel Messi. What surprised me the most is that people don't seem to understand that he plays for Barcelona, that's his team. He was playing against Estudiantes, yes, of course, a club from Argentina. In my opinion, I think either way, if the result has gone, it is a great day and a great moment for fans of Argentina. Being Estudiantes, a club from Argentina, if they won it, and Lionel Messi, a player from Argentina, which he has won it.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And just to track back a little bit, you said Messi is, the best player suited right now for us to take the helm from Maradona and become a real number 10. And if you think about it, how many players in the past wore that number 10 shirt? You think about Ortega, you think about Riquelme, you think about Aymar. All of them did, and to a certain extent, I don't want to say failed, but okay, Ortega definitely failed. Riquelme and Aymar, they weren't quite up to the level. Yes, they're better playmakers than Messi, no doubt about that. I'm not a blind Messi fan who will say Messi is the best player ever and everything. No, he has his faults. But considering that Messi is what, 22? 23? Come on, the kid still has a long way to go. He still has a good 10 years ahead of him. Heading into South Africa, he's our number 10. He's our best player, whether people want to like it or not. I don't care if he's playing horribly for us. I don't care if he's playing better, the best for us. He's our star player heading into the World Cup, and all the pressure is on him, and it's not
Definitely.
fair. And he's been the scapegoat for us. I mean,
Yeah.
whenever something's wrong with the national team, you blame it on Messi, and it's a joke.
Yeah, definitely I agree with you. And in fact, I think if Diego was smart enough to know that he doesn't really have just Lionel Messi in his team, he has a whole lot of bunch of other young talented players. Pretty much I would say the best generation to come out in a very long time for Argentina. He can actually try his utmost level best to make the responsibility well balanced, not just put it everything on Messi, expecting Messi to create almost like everything, to dribble past four or five players in every single time when he gets the ball. It doesn't work all the time. Yes, in Barca, he definitely has a wonderful system that works around him very well. But in Argentina, sad to say, I mean, I'm not going to blame the players, but it's just that Diego hasn't really managed to create such a system that works for Messi with the national team. And to me, I still believe it's not something impossible because when you have players like Pablo Aimar, you have Gonzalo Higuain, you have Mascherano, you have Di Maria, all these guys equally talented in their very own respective position, it is possible that you can actually create a system that allows Messi to flourish and play his best game for the national team.
Oh, you're right. In a way, it's ridiculous the amount of talented players we have in midfield and we have in attack. Even defender-wise, even if Maradona doesn't see it, we do have several talented defenders. But you're right. With players like Di Maria, Higuain, Aymar, Mascherano, it's really surprising to see how incapable Diego is when it comes to managing this team. Yes, they're all star players, but none of them are really, you know, hard-headed. None of them really have a big ego, which is obviously to our advantage. If you look at other teams, their star players have a big ego. That's not the case for us. Everyone on our team seems to be level-headed and everything. And it's surprising because we have a bunch of talented players that Diego keeps calling up, the most random set of players. I don't know how many players he's called up so far since becoming the manager, but it's ridiculous. He keeps calling out player after player, no system. Look, we're heading into 2010 now. It's late December, pretty much January. Diego should have a certain group of players that are untouchable, or maybe not untouchable, but that at the very least have a place on the national team. And aside from Mascherano, Messi, and even Higuain at this moment, I don't see anyone else having, you know, a safe spot on the national team. And it shouldn't be that way. It really shouldn't be that way. You have talented players. Zanetti, for one, should be called up. Samuel should have been called up a while back. If you call up these players, if you would have called them up, say, for the match against Brazil or the match against Spain, then from there you could start building a real core of players, build some chemistry, build some teamwork and everything, but that's not the case.
Yeah. And another thing that surprised me is the fact that people are angry that Lionel Messi scored against a club from Argentina. Now, I'm not so sure if I may say this, but I mean, we all know that, for example, like Carlos Tevez, he really has this love for Boca. Had it been Manchester City versus Boca, he will be expected to play his level best for Man City, even though he's playing against the club of his childhood. Because end of the day, City is the one that are paying his salary. I think it doesn't take a genius to understand that. And it's sad that when people are questioning about his celebration scoring for Barca being in some way some sort of like, some sort of traitor or something like that, it's really sad.
Mm-hmm. No, it is. And you mentioned if had it been someone like Tevez, well, had it been Manchester City against Boca, Tevez scores and celebrates the way that Messi did, then okay, I can understand people getting angry and ticked off at Tevez because it's his childhood club, you know, Boca. But Messi has no attachment whatsoever to Estudiantes, and that's something that I think some people don't realize. Yeah. It's not as if Messi played for Estudiantes in the past, you know, for several years, won a lot with them, and then moved to Barca, scores, and celebrates the way he did. I mean, he just scored the game winner for his team in extra time. Would you expect him not celebrate because some Estudiantes fans might get mad at him? Come on, it's the kid is 22. Let him enjoy the life. Let him enjoy the way he plays. Let him celebrate. Let him do what he wants. It's some people really take this too seriously.
Yeah, and just for the record, I mean, to everyone here, for me, the best team that has any connection with Argentina in 2009, hands down, is Estudiantes. To me, I believe that as far as I'm concerned, they have done Argentina more than anything else that even the senior national team or even the U team or even our under 17 team has done in 2009. They are the best team in terms of their achievement of winning the Copa Libertadores and the fact that let's give them the respect that they deserve. They did give Barcelona a run for their money. They were just 1 minute away from becoming the best club of 2009.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You look at Estudiantes, they're a good team. They're not shabby at all. They're a really good team. Verón, Brania, Clemente Rodriguez. They're a good team. And you're right. They were literally 1 minute away from keeping the Champions League the Spanish Copa del Rey and the Spanish League Cup champions out of kicking them out of the Club World Cup finals. You know, it was the trophy was pretty much Estudiantes, and then they turn on the switch. Barcelona turns on the switch. They get a goal. Pedro scores for them, and you could tell the second Pedro scored, that was it for Estudiantes. It was lights out. And one of the problems for Estudiantes, and it's also a problem for us, Verón is 34, going to be 35. He played 120 minutes. He played the full 120. He was exhausted, and you could clearly tell he was done by full time. Is this guy supposed to be one of the leaders on the Argentina national team and lead us to World Cup glory? I don't think so.
No, I will agree with you. I don't think so, because his age factor is definitely a big thing that we need to consider. I would say that he could play more of I mean, him being a senior guy in the national team, he could play a more important role off the pitch, especially trying to inspire these young players to do great things. But at the same time, I can understand that he also is very highly motivated to go out in the national team, especially to South Africa, and prove a point to everyone, considering how much that he has went through after 2002 World Cup. And here is another guy that I can tell you that he will definitely be the best advisor for Lionel Messi in terms of how the media and the public respond in Argentina is always scrutinizing when a player doesn't perform their best for the national team.
Oh yeah, you're right. And I, you know, when I think of Verón at the World Cup in 2010, I think maybe he could play a similar role that Caniggia played for us in 2002, which is, you know, Caniggia didn't really even get a single minute in 2002, but he was there. He was on the bench. He was more of a motivator type of guy, and Verón could probably be that for us. And you're right about him helping out Messi. There was an interview up. I think it still is up on FIFA.com. This was prior to the Club World Cup final. They interviewed Messi, and Messi said he knows Varane very well. And Varane was the first guy in 2007 to really just, you know, to help him get with the team and gel with the team and, you know, kind of introduce him to everyone else and everything. And that's good. You know, Messi and Varane seem to have a good connection. But how much of a serious role can Varane play in 2010 is yet to be seen.
Yeah, but like what you said, you know, I mean, if he's going to play the same role as Claudio Caniggia did in 2002, let's hope that he doesn't get sent off for all the wrong reason, if you know what I mean.
Caniggia got sent off for saying something to the referee, which I think we all know what it is. We don't have to repeat it on this podcast. But yeah, I mean, hopefully not. Hopefully he doesn't get red carded, but hopefully he can play a similar role to Caniggia.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I guess it's enough about the FIFA Club World Cup. So, what is next for Lionel Messi right now?
I think we all know what that is. The FIFA World Cup definitely has to be it. He's won everything there is to win club-wise. Same thing as Tevez, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's time to bring home the big one. It
Yeah.
really is, and it's long overdue. 1986 seems like a long time ago.
Yeah,
We
definitely.
have to get our third star.
Yeah, but let's not forget there is also one more almost unfinished business for Lionel Messi, which is the FIFA Players Gala of 2009, and let's look at the candidates for a start. Who are the players that has been nominated for the Player of the Year award?
I think, well, I don't have the list in front of me, but Messi, Xavi, Iniesta, Cristiano Ronaldo, and I think the fifth one is Kaká, if I'm not mistaken, Ricardo Kaká from Brazil.
Yeah.
That looks about right, actually. I'm double checking right now. That looks about right. You look at that, you have to say top three. It has to be Messi, Xavi, Iniesta.
Yeah. But I mean let's try to think outside the box a little bit. Do you think Xavi can somehow rather topple Messi on this
Well,
occasion, considering that when it comes to the national team, Xavi had a much better year for Spain as compared to Messi had for Argentina. Club-wise, I would say definitely these two guys are very much on par. They're neck and neck ahead of anyone else in the world. But when it comes to the national team, when we're looking at overall success they had in 2009. Do you think is it possible that there's going to be a surprise here?
It's possible that Xavi beats out Messi. I mean, everything's possible, but I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. Look, Xavi has been as instrumental for Barcelona as anyone else on the team, if not more. If Xavi's not there, Barcelona's midfield does not work. It doesn't run, even if Iniesta's there. If Xavi's not there, Barcelona doesn't work. If Xavi's not there, Spain doesn't work.
Yeah.
But if you watch the matches for Barcelona, it's kind of the same thing for Messi. If Messi's not on the pitch, Barcelona's midfield works, but that final touch in attack is just not there. And more often than not, it's Messi that comes off from the bench and scores the equalizing goal or the game winner. And that's why I think they're really close. For me, personally, for me, Messi's number one, Xavi's number two, right behind him.
Mm-hmm.
But as for a surprise, I don't think it's going to happen. Not this year, no. It's possible, but no.
No. I mean, I have to agree with you because I don't see anyhow any one of these candidates are capable enough to snatch the award away from Messi, because I believe, and the reason why I'm saying this, because it's almost as if that he's actually, his name is already written on it. He just has to go and show up and collect it and go back home. That's it.
Yeah, no, and that's usually how it is every year. I mean, even last year with Ronaldo, as much as I would have liked to have seen Messi win it, deep down inside, Ronaldo had a great season the year he won the World Player of the Year, and it's the same thing with Messi. And the thing with Messi is, it's the same thing with Ronaldo. It's all those goals, 38, 39 goals. For me, and the way I see it, FIFA and the voters are always going to go with the player who has the most goals, rather than the player who sets up the goals.
Yeah. And let's not forget that in two important finals that Barcelona has played this year, Messi is the one that finished them off in Barca's favor.
Yeah, you're right. Club World Cup, he scored. Spanish Super Cup, he scored. UEFA Super Cup, he had the assist on Pedro's goal. Champions League, he had the goal. Spanish League, countless goals. Copa del Rey, he scored in the final. He scored in five out of a possible six finals, which is just remarkable.
Yeah. So with that said, we're just about what, a few hours away for the award ceremony.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, it's at 2 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Eastern around that time. It's currently 10 a.m. Eastern. It's a few hours away. Look, let's not kid ourselves. It's Messi. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. And in case if some of you guys out there who still don't believe us, well, don't let us say that we told you so in this podcast.
Yeah, though I doubt we're the only ones that that know that Messi's going to win this.
Yeah. Okay, we'll be right back in our next segment. Okay, we're back now with another segment of this season-ending Mundo Albiceleste's podcast. And we're going to touch just a short or just a little bit on the January transfer window, which is going to be pretty much an exciting one, because considering the fact that already we know that one player has made his transfer, and of course there is also several other speculation taking place. So which is the one that we know that has already made his move to another club, Roy?
We know that Alejandro Dominguez signed with Valencia last week. He wasn't on the bench. He didn't play any part in Valencia's match yesterday against Deportivo La Coruña. But he signed with them. I guess it's just, match fitness-wise and just blending with the team that's missing. But yeah, heading into the January transfer window, there's a lot of players that are rumored to move. One of them, Fernando Gago, rumors of him moving are, flying left and right, so to speak. Another one is, and this is just completely random, and I don't even know if you still remember him, Maxi Lopez from Gremio, who the former Barcelona man.
Oh, okay.
The former Barcelona man, Maxi Lopez, who's currently with Gremio. From what I read, the rumors are that he's going somewhere in Italy. I forget the team. It might be Catania. I'm not sure. But he might move. Bolatti as well is rumored to make the switch to Spain. There's a few players, a few names flying around.
But nothing comes bigger for when it comes to Kun Aguero's move to Chelsea, right?
Yeah, Sergio Aguero moving to Chelsea. That, you know, it depends which side you want to read or which side you want to believe. If you look at Atletico Madrid and Sergio Aguero, they'll say, well, if you look at Atletico Madrid, they'll say, no, Aguero's not moving. You look at Aguero and you hear Aguero say, I'm not moving unless Atletico Madrid need the money. So there's definitely subtext in there. I could see him moving. I don't know if it's for Chelsea. Maybe in the January transfer window. But I definitely see Aguero gone by summertime. By World Cup, Aguero's out of Atletico. And same thing goes for Maxi Rodriguez. If I'm not mistaken, I read this is his last year with Atletico and doesn't look like they're going to renew his contract. So that's another one to look out for.
Okay. I mean, considering that Aguero, he has all the desire in the world to play for a much bigger team. I mean, I'm not saying that Atletico is not as big as Chelsea, but of course, when Chelsea come knocking on your door, you know for a fact that the money is going to be extremely good. It's very hard for some players to say no. And in Aguero's case, considering that he is not just having a great time with Atletico, but even the club itself is struggling in La Liga, there is a high possibility that he might make the move. Not that I'm very keen, so to speak, of, because we all know when Chelsea, when they sign players, you know, they do things a lot crazier than any other clubs in this world. And then most likely, you know, end up on the bench and these kind of things. But we'll just have to wait and see what's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. And especially Chelsea concerning Argentinian players. If you look at Varane, you look at
We know that there hasn't been Argentina player that has a great time in Chelsea. And even Franco Di Santo, so to speak, you know, he's now even away from them. It's not a club basically for young talent. That's what I can say.
To a certain extent, I don't even think it's a place for older talent either. You can never know with Chelsea. They're really depth. They have a strong team, really depth team. But you can never predict their starting 11 ever. And if you think about Aguero going to Chelsea, there's a lot of positives, believe it or not, but there's a lot of negatives as well. One of them, obviously, Argentinian player going to Chelsea or Argentinian player moving to the English league in general. For some reason, that never works out good. Especially with Chelsea right now, if you think about it, Anelka's on form, Drogba's on form. How much playing time would Aguero actually get? And is Aguero scrappy enough? Is he strong enough to withstand the English league? That's a big question as well. But if you look at the positives in another way, he might be physically ready for the World Cup. If he makes a switch, I think his playing time will become a lot more balanced than what it is at Atletico Madrid, because with Atletico, Aguero just plays a full 90 minutes week in, week out, and he's pretty much dead at the moment. With Chelsea, he might get a bit less playing time. You know, physically, he might be in the best shape of his life heading into the World Cup. So that might play to our advantage. I guess only time will tell.
Yeah. Okay. With that said, right now, let's move on to the main reason that why we wanted to do this podcast in the first place, Roy. So you want to explain to all our listeners what this podcast is all about?
Season review, a full season review. 2009 season review, Argentina, the good, the bad, the ugly, the Maradona. look, you think of 2009, there's been a lot of ups, but definitely a lot of downs. You think about the first World Cup qualifier for Argentina under Diego against Venezuela, where, if I'm not mistaken, we won 4-0. Yep. And then you think of the debacle in Bolivia, which is just horrible, 6-1 thrashing. And then, you know, you think about the match against Ecuador, which was really just a dagger in the heart, where we played really well. I think we outplayed them on the day, but our finishing wasn't there. We lost. Then the two consecutive victories, the two consecutive losses against Brazil and Paraguay. You know, I said this before on the previous podcast, and you said it as well. We did not want to head into Montevideo and Uruguay needing a victory, because it just wasn't going to happen. Surprisingly, we were wrong. We got the 3 points and we qualified. But that pretty much sums up, you know, in a short 30-second thing, that sums up Argentina's in 2009. But obviously, we're not going to talk about short. We're going to go in depth, and that's how 2009 was for me.
Well, for me, it has been a very, very interesting roller coaster ride, considering that back in January, I think there was a whole lot of optimism about what we can expect from this year. I mean, we all remember when Diego came in, he had a good match against Scotland. And then in January, of course, there was rumors going around here and there about which player is going to come in, what are the names that has been speculated to make it to the team. But I guess the most important thing that took place in that month was the South American Under-20 Championship, in which I believe it's still hard for me to accept that we did not go to, was it in Egypt this time?
Egypt or Nigeria?
I think Nigeria hosted the Under-17. Egypt is the one that
Oh,
hosted the
yes.
Under-20.
Yes, you're right, you're right.
The fact that we did not go and defended our title, defended the only championship that I can say that in its entire history, we kind of like owned it because we won it more than any other team in the history of the World Under-20 Championship.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Pekerman leaves, Batista comes in, and the rest is just horrible, horrible. Everything Pekerman has worked on with the youth side, the under 20, the under 19, under 17, everything. It's all washed away. All that progress, everything is down the drain. You're right. I think everyone expected us to qualify for the under 20 World Cup in Egypt. Maybe not qualify easily because we never do qualify easily. But at least qualify and at least make the tournament, and it just wasn't the case. And some people could blame, oh, well, we didn't have Franco Di Santo, or we didn't have Piatti, we didn't have this, we didn't have that. But in the end, Batista had a pretty strong squad. I mean, not as good as he would like it to have been, but it was still a strong team that he had. And it didn't happen for us. And it's sad because, like you said, Under 20 World Cup, it's usually ours. We're always one of the strong favorites. We always usually end up winning it more often than not. But 2009 was not the year for our youth side, whether it be under 20 or under 17.
Yeah, and the fact that it's also said that if had we made it to Egypt, it could have been a huge platform for players like what you mentioned, Franco Di Santo, and then I'm sure Javier Pastore, and what about Pablo Piatti? These guys would have had, the perfect stage for them to shine and really enhance their reputation in football, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Again, it goes back to the missing two, three players at the South American Championship. But yeah, definitely, the Under 20 World Cup would have been used for great to get to gain great experience for the players like you mentioned, Piatti, Pastore, and Franco Di Santo. But it wasn't meant to be. Hopefully, 2010's is a better year for us, both senior and youth side.
Okay. And then in February, now this is where it all started, our friendly match against France. And of course, I'm sure we can all agree that it was perhaps the game that really gave us a whole lot of optimism of what we can expect from Diego in the upcoming World Cup qualifying matches. We played extremely well against this French side in front of their own backyard, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, the match against France, we played good. As Emiliano Papa just got absolutely destroyed on the left by Franck Ribéry, and he needed Gutierrez to cover up for him several times during that match. But yeah, you're right. It was a solid match against France. We defended properly, like we defended acceptable, not great, but it was good. Attack wise, once Tevez came in, it was that extra spark. We got that goal. Beating France is not easy, and beating France in France itself is not, even that just makes it much more harder. And yeah, you're right. That gave us, an extra boost, and it showed some positive signs in the national team, and maybe some false hopes were created after that victory.
Yeah. And then we head into the month of March, in which our first World Cup qualifier since we lost to Chile, which was against Venezuela. But before that, there was some important development taking place in Mundo, in which this was the month that we finally unveiled our first ever episode of the Mundo del Bicicletta podcast. And above all, this was the month at which you came into Mundo, Roy.
Yeah, it was. I remember getting asked by Seb if I would like to join, and obviously, no hesitation whatsoever, I said yes. And yeah, I'm really thankful. I'm grateful for Seba and you, both of you, giving me the chance to work with you guys. It's been fun, and yeah, it's been a great experience
Yeah.
so far.
And of course, we started this World Cup qualifier in flying. We almost thrashed this Venezuelan side 4-0. But I'm not so sure. Before I have anything to say about this game, maybe you would like to start off with something.
Yeah, the match against Venezuela, it was a great showing for our guys. If I'm not mistaken, we played a 3-4-3, three defenders, three midfielders, three attackers. But at the same time, we played really good and everything. But at the same time, the most of that Venezuelan team was made up of the under 20 Venezuela side, which is why our players had a field day. I mean, literally, we dominated everything and every aspect in that match. It gave us, again, like the match against France, it gave us some false hope. We had just beaten Venezuela, yes, we got a solid 3 points, a well-needed 3 points, I might add. And heading into Bolivia, I think everyone thought, oh, you know, it's Bolivia, but even if it's at altitude, we should be able to do well against them, and obviously that wasn't the case.
Yeah, you have to agree with you because the opponents that we played in terms of the depth that Venezuela had and the quality that Venezuela had to offer was definitely there's a lot of question mark involved. Of course, we did collect 3 points, which was very important, but I don't think that game really kind of like summarized our full potential in my opinion because overall it was a David and Goliath performance in my opinion, and there's nothing much we can say about that except that fans of Argentina had a day to rejoice because we finally got a win, considering that 2008 in our World Cup qualifier, we ended the whole year without a win, if you can remember that.
Yeah, I remember that. We lost to Chile. We drew no. We lost to Chile. We drew to Paraguay, I think. Am I right?
Yep.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah, and you know, I remember that match specifically because it was the first match where we had the chat room on Mundo Albiceleste, and we had, I think, around 18 or 19 people in the chat, and everyone was talking. It was real fun. It was a great experience, and that, you know, the little things like that made it much more memorable, the match.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to say actually because in 2008 we did actually defeat Uruguay, our only win in the World Cup qualifier, just to correct that.
Okay.
Then next up it's the month of April. I'm sure this is a month where nobody wants to talk about.
Wants to talk about it at all. I remember because April 1st here in Canada and, well, in North America, I don't know about the rest of the world, we have this thing called April Fools where, you know, you pull a prank on someone and everything.
Yeah,
And I
we
remember
remember
April
that. We
yeah I
remember that.
remember April April 1st, I posted something saying Messi is injured. Gabriel Inci is the one that injured him in training. He's going to miss the match against Bolivia. And I remember a bunch of people just replied, and they're like, "What? No way! This is crazy!" And then finally, at the end, they read that it was a joke, and it was a relief. And I remember one person saying, "I don't even think this is a joke. I really do believe that Inci injured him." And yeah, but no, you're right. The month of April was not a good month for us whatsoever. The loss against Bolivia really, it was a huge blow. It was a knockout blow. It hurt, and yeah, it was a downfall for us.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is one game where I really, really try to avoid meeting up anyone and speaking about it to anybody because it was a disaster, in my opinion, whether you like it or not. Blame it on the altitude for whatever reason people may say, but it's not like in the past that we never went to Bolivia and came away with 3 points or even a single point for that matter. But a lose 6-1, that was terrible. And I feel glad that we can actually, although it's not easy to put it behind, because definitely that match will definitely be in the spotlight in our national team's football history as one of the darkest moment. But we're glad that we can actually say that we did manage to qualify to South Africa despite having been hammered by Bolivia.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that we could look back at it and say, yeah, it was a dark time, but we still, we fought through it and we qualified. And just to touch a little bit on what you said, yes, it was at altitude, and yes, maybe our players weren't ready, but there's only so much you can blame on the weather and on the altitude. Our players, especially Diego, of all people, should have known that going to Bolivia was not going to be easy. If I'm not mistaken, he was a person who petitioned against FIFA to keep to allow Ecuador and Bolivia to host games at altitude. So, you would think Diego, of all people, would know what he's getting himself into. And obviously not, that wasn't the case.
Yeah. And of course, whenever the darkest hours of our national football team, there's always some of the people that represents Argentina that sort of pops up out of nowhere and really fries, I'm sorry, flies the flag very proudly. And if there was one, that development that took place in the month of April was in the sport of golf, in which Angel Cabrera won the Augusta Masters. It's always been the case when it comes to Argentina. Our football team, when there's a whole lot of expectation to go out there and really do something, when they don't do well, some of the guys turn up and say, "Hey, let us make you guys proud."
If so, you're right, if something is wrong, just some other sport or someone else in another sport just pops up and, like you said, waves the flag high for Argentina. And that's, for Cabrera, that was huge winning that tournament. It really was, especially against the opponents that he faced. And congratulations, my hat's off to him.
Yeah. And of course, another development that took place in April was the qualifying round for the Under-17 World Cup. Were you optimistic about this, Roy, in the first place?
I mean, yes and no. A part of me said, you know what, there's no way we're going to miss another youth tournament in the same year. It's just, for me, it wasn't possible. I had a feeling we would make it, but in my head, I kept saying, we're going to struggle, we're going to struggle.
Yeah. So we move on to the month of May, in which pretty much it's all about the season-ending European football. And of course, there was one particular game that took place with the national team, which was against Panama, which you actually did touch earlier. How much can we actually take from this game? Is it more or less just a formality sake, just to have a friendly match to be played? Is there anything else, any high points that we can actually look from this game?
I mean, to be honest, I don't fully remember the starting lineup. I think Enzo Perez played in that match. I'm pretty sure Eduardo Salvio, yeah, Salvio did play in that match. I think it was just a chance to give some of the local guys a chance, a shot. See how they do. Maybe they might get called up to the national team. I didn't take anything seriously from it, no.
Yeah. I mean, of course, if there is one local player that really capitalized on this opportunity, it was Gonzalo Bergesio, who scored a brace against Panama. And shortly after that, I think he made his move to France to play for Saint-Étienne. And he's doing not bad at all in the French league right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those strikers that, it took him time to I think adjust to the French league. But right now, I'm looking at his stats; it's not too bad. Oh, I'm looking at Wikipedia. I'm not sure how what's the word? How correct or how accurate it is. But he shows here that he has 2 goals in 3 matches versus Saint-Étienne, which I'm assuming is not the case anymore, or hopefully not. But yeah, he's one of those players that made the switch from South America to Europe, and I don't, to be honest with you, I don't think he has much of a shot to get onto the national team. I don't know if that's what you're hinting at, because we do have other players in better players in his position than him. But I'm glad that, he made the switch from South America to Europe, and at 25, it's not like he made the switch when he was 19 or something. I know he played at Benfica for a little bit and went back to San Lorenzo, but it's good that he made the switch back to Europe, as when he was more mature, and not like some of these players at the age of 17 or 18.
Yeah, I mean that's what I'm trying to say, because at the end of the day, it was all the local players and it was their opportunity. And Gonzalo Bragesio, for his part, he actually grabbed the opportunity with both hands very well. And it was a good move for him. But of course, that month was all about none other than the big battle that took place in Rome between Carlitos and Lionel. It was huge, in my opinion.
It was, it was. You had the reigning Champions League winners, the English winners, going up against, at the time, well, still is, the best team in the world, playing-wise. And, you know, the big story going in was obviously Messi versus Ronaldo, and if Manchester could win back-to-back Champions League for the first time in, well, in Champions League, not European Cup history, but Champions League history. Manchester started the game off strong, and the rest, it was just Barcelona. Once Eto'o scored, the rest was, you know, as they say, history. Then Barcelona just got going, and they kept playing better and better. And that, for me, when the lineups came out and I saw that Tevez was on the bench, I right away I told myself this is Tevez's last match with Manchester, and I was right.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he, in my opinion, I think Carlos Tevez, I mean, it's sad to say, he was in many ways, I think, mistreated for all the things that he have done for Man United during his 2 year stay in the club. It's easier to forget the fact that when he played on that night in Moscow in 2008, he was arguably the best player on the field.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And to just because you said that Tevez was, you know, unappreciated with Manchester, and you're right. And I think that had it been in any other league in the world, whether it be the Spanish league, the Italian league, the German league, Portuguese, doesn't matter. If it's in any other league, Tevez would have started every match for Manchester United ahead of Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
But because it's the English league, because it's Manchester United, you know, Ferguson had to go with, you know, English's golden boy, so to speak, Wayne Rooney. And now that Tevez is with Manchester City, his goal scoring record is getting a lot better.
Yeah, and of course that month it was pretty much the end of all the top leagues in Europe, and we can say that pretty easier to say that most of our Argentine players were champions in their respective leagues, right?
Yeah, Messi obviously with Barcelona, Tevez with Manchester United, he won the English league. If you look at who else, Italy. Well, I mean, Inter Milan. You had Crespo, who was still with them. El Capitano Javi Zanetti. You had Esteban Cambiasso, Nicolas Paradiso, who was now with Roma. Walter Samuel. You had a lot of players win a lot of things.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of Argentinian players winning a lot of things, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, the top scorer in the among all the best league in the in this among the top leagues in Europe was none other than Diego Milito. He was just one goal short of Ibrahimovic of finishing Serie A top scorer. What a great year it was for him.
Yeah, you know, here's someone who I think is vastly underrated, not just for Argentina, but in Europe in general. This guy has scored goals wherever he went, whether it be in Argentina, whether it be in Spain or in Italy. Genoa, he scored goals left and right. Real Zaragoza, he scored goals left and right. Back to Genoa again, left and right. He went with Inter. I mean, this is someone who, like, he scores goals. He's not just a goal poacher, but he scores wherever you put him. Wherever you put him on the field, he'll score any team, any league. And for some reason, if you think about top teams, no one, especially this summer, no one really talked about, oh yeah, Diego Milito might go here, he might go there. It was all about Samuel Eto'o, Ronaldo, and everyone else. And for some reason, I don't know why, I find that Diego Milito has never gotten the right recognition that he deserves.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in my opinion, he's still probably the best poacher that we have right out there. We got Gonzalo Higuain and we got Lisandro Lopez, but when you talk about Diego Milito, the fact that he plays for a top team like Inter Milan in a very tough league like Serie A, for whatever he does, it's definitely a five-star performance, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just the European countries or European clubs that underrate him. I mean, obviously, Alfio Basile seemed to have underrated him as well, and same thing for Diego Maradona. I mean, I'm convinced that had Diego Milito started the match against Brazil or started a lot more matches for us in World Cup qualifying, that for us it would not have went to the wire against Uruguay. We probably would have qualified in the match against Brazil had we won, or the match against Paraguay. It wouldn't have went to the wire, no way.
Okay, now we move on to the month of June, in which we will resume back the World Cup qualifier. We started off with a game against Colombia, which, in my opinion, no doubt that we won the game 1-0, but it was a whole lot of scrappy performance from our team. You agree?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I remember I was in Lebanon at the time, and the match was airing at, I think, 9 or 10 p.m. at night. So, it was good. I had everything ready. I did everything during the day. I sat down. I was ready to watch the match, and I saw the starting lineup, and it was just no way, no way. I mean, I know Diaz scored the only goal for us, but that performance, not only by Diaz but by the rest of the team, was just absolutely horrible. In every sense of the word, Diaz was bad. Eze was bad. I think the only two that were trying were probably Messi and Mascherano. Varane played decent on the day as well. Gago was just bad. It was a horrible performance. And to be honest, I'm lucky. We're lucky that we got the 3 points in that match.
And of course, I mean, some of us in the Mundo, we thought that, okay, maybe this win will start off, it's sort of like a breath of fresh air for what is going to happen next. And little did we expect from the trip to Ecuador, it's going to be just another one of those days where everyone is going to be mad at what's going on with our national team.
I mean, the match against Ecuador, like I said earlier, I really think we played really good in that match. And I would go as far as saying that we deserved something from that match. But early on, right away, when Messi missed that sitter, I mean, I remember Eze going all the way. He was pretty much playing as a left winger for us, Gabriel Eze. He sent in, it was a low cross or a low pass, and Messi just had to touch it, and it would have went in. But he absolutely missed the ball. He missed the sitter, and right then and there, I saw that, and I was like, "We're losing this match." But even after that, we kept playing well, and everything, and we got a penalty. And then Tevez just bombs it, and that confirmed all my suspicions that we're losing this match.
And of course, as soon as that game was over, the worst fear, which we will discuss, which we will discuss in just about 1 or 2 months more ahead of us. But of course, in the month of June, a lot of interesting transfer took place. One of which was Saviola clinching his deal to Benfica, and the big one, which is Carlos Tevez leaving Manchester United for, of all teams, Manchester City.
I remember on the Mundo we had a poll going around. This was, I think, in May even. Where would you like Carlos Tevez to go, to move? One of them obviously was Manchester City. The other was Inter Milan. You had Barcelona. You had a bunch of random European teams. And believe it or not, I think the top vote was Manchester City. Myself, I voted for Inter Milan. This was prior to Eto'o going there. I really do think that Tevez and Milito up front could do wonders for Inter Milan. But I was wrong. He went to Manchester City, and in a way, I'm glad I'm wrong. He seems to have refound his goal scoring boots. He's doing well. Hopefully, he can, use that to his advantage and start scoring again for Argentina, because it's been a long time since he scored.
Yeah, of course, I was just like you. I mean, I voted for Inter Milan because I felt that Serie A and plus Jose Mourinho's style of game definitely suits Carlos Tevez very well. And, well, Man City, I agree with Seba. It's not really a bad move for him, considering that he's quite well settled in England as compared to many other Argentine players in the past. I mean, I think he's very happy to be there. And it was great for him in some ways to kind of like piss off all the United fans for what has happened just a month ago in Rome and to move to another club. And Man City fans were amazing. I mean, they put up this huge banner telling that Tevez, welcome to Manchester. That was very interesting.
I saw it was a huge poster. If I'm not mistaken, it was a poster, and it was right next to a Manchester United poster, I think, and it was like 10 times the size. I'm not sure if that was it, but yeah, you're right. And He stayed with Manchester, or in Manchester, different team, same city. He's well adjusted to England. He's been one of those rare players for us that has done well in England and seems to be continuing doing what to do well. And the good thing about Manchester City is that, okay, no, they're not in the Champions League, obviously not, but he gets very good minutes over there. They don't overuse him, and that's good. And I think he knows his spot on the team, rather than when he was with Manchester United, where he had no clue whether he was going to play or not.
Yeah, and let's move on to the month of July, which was pretty much a very quiet month, except for the fact that we had a friendly against Russia. But before that, we did know that there was rumors going around that our World Cup qualifier match against Brazil will not be played at the usual the
And Monumental.
Monumental. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
But instead, it will be moved to Rosario, which happens to be Messi's hometown as well.
Yeah, that was a bit of useless added pressure by Maradona on Messi. I guess it was just a way for Maradona to piss off the River Plate fans after everything that happened with him. Yeah, look, the match that was just useless. There was no point of moving it to Rosario. I mean, I know people like to say, yeah, the fans are, 2 or 3 meters away from the pitch, and it adds excitement, and maybe it does. I've never been, obviously, I've never been to that stadium, and chances are I never will. But to change venues like that was useless. I mean, all of our matches are played at the Monumental. Keep it there. There was no point in moving it. It added extra pressure on Messi, extra pressure on our players, and in the end, it didn't pay off at all.
Yeah, and of course by now there is a pretty much a very strong and growing anger towards Diego about the next important subject that we're going to talk about, which is some of the players that he often ignores being called up for the national team, and it doesn't get anything better when Gonzalo Higuain name was not in the list for the match against Russia. I mean, looking back, what was your thought going around that time?
Well, to be honest with you, the rumors of Higuain going to the team in Russia, I mean, I was in Lebanon, so I didn't keep up that much, but I saw the list. I didn't see Higuain, and I wasn't surprised at all. I was surprised that I saw Lisandro Lopez and Diego Milito on the list, though. I'll tell you that much. But no, I saw the list. No Higuain. I wasn't surprised at all.
Ben, of course, the match against Russia, which was played in Moscow, again, I think although it's just a friendly game, but we can't really say it's not a game that we there's nothing for us to gain for, because Russia, as coached by Gus Hiddink, is pretty much one of the best teams in Europe at that time, and we came away with a fantastic result.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of positives to take from that match. It was a hard-fought match. It was a competitive match. It wasn't just, your typical friendly. Both teams went for the win. Diego Milito finally started a match. He, if I'm not mistaken, he made several good passes to Aguero, and Aguero just bombed every single chance. Aguero scored a great goal after that, right outside the box at the end of the first half. Second half, Milito, I believe it was, that came off. Lopez came in, scored a goal 10 seconds in. We were up 2-1. It was a good game. Lots of positives to be taken from this match. Though I don't know how much Maradona himself took from this match, but it was a good one.
Yeah, and of course, right after that game, it was all about Brazil, in which there was a whole lot of news going around here and there. But nothing gets more crazier than when you think about Diego decided to call up Fabrizio Colaccini above all games against Brazil.
Yeah, I remember Colaccini got called up, Schiavi got called up. It was a weird list, and the second I saw the list, I was like, I mean, we could win this. I remember going on the podcast right before the match, where I said that, we are Argentina and we're gonna step up and we're gonna win and this and that. Obviously, I was wrong. It was a horrible match. Yeah, that's some match, and September was never a good month for us ever, but
Yeah.
that's definitely a match and a month I would like to forget.
Yeah, definitely September was, when it comes to football, it was probably the most scariest month ever for us. And of course, we were nervous about the match against Brazil. And definitely, I mean, deep down, we all wanted to win. But we just had this feeling in us that it's never going to happen. Not especially with the way things have been going around with our national team under Diego during that time.
Yeah, I mean, Brazil was, you know, Brazil needed a victory and they were going to clinch. And Maradona was playing with fire, you know. He put out a weird lineup. It was his way or the highway, and you know, no Higuain again at the time. He went with Messi and Aguero up front, which is just ridiculous. Aguero in September was going through a rough patch, both with Argentina and with Atletico Madrid. Then second half, I remember Aguero came off, Milito came on, and Milito right away almost scored. His shot was saved by Julio Cesar, but still, he came close. And Diego, it was a weird time for our national team.
Yeah, and of course, the highlight of the game was Jesus Dotolo scoring an amazing goal that really kind of like gave us a chance to get back to this game.
Yeah, it gave us hope. I mean, it was 2-0 for Brazil, 2-0. And then Dotolo just scores out of nowhere and it's 2-1. And, you know, I was watching the match, it's 2-1, and I was like, nice, you know, we might be able to actually get something from it. And then Brazil just, you know, like 5 minutes later just scores, and that was it. It was 3-0, and I don't know, when Brazil scored the first goal right away, that's when you knew it was lights out for us.
Yeah. And of course, right after that game, when everything was said and done, here comes an even more scarier, proposition that was about to take place. The trip to Paraguay, in which I think by that time, you know, nobody, I mean, all the comments that we're getting in Mundo, including from myself, and I'm not sure about you, Roy, we were all very much almost out of our minds. We were very angry and we were very kind of like disturbed of what's really happening and what's going on. And I can remember that we actually did put even a post on that about here comes the worst scenario.
Yeah, I think all of us were really nervous and we were pretty negative concerning the match against Paraguay. But prior to the match, prior to the Brazil match, I thought that we would struggle or we would get something from the Brazil match, and we would, I don't know, for some reason I was really, really positive heading into the Paraguay match. But then we lost to Brazil and my confidence level just dropped really, really low. And if there's one good thing that we could take away from the match against Paraguay, it's Sergio Romero. It was his first national team call-up or first match with the national team. He did really well. He made two very good saves that really kept us in the game. But our forwards, our team, just wasn't able to, you know, capitalize on those saves and use it to their advantage.
Yeah. But of course, I think the biggest highlight of that game that went throughout the entire world was the fact that a 37-year-old defender making his debut for the national team.
And don't forget Martin Palermo as well. 10 years after, that was I remember right after the match, in the chat room during the match, and when Palermo came in, everyone were just bashing him and Diego, and everyone was like, "Oh, we want Diego out. Get him, you know, fire him. This is a joke." And it really was a joke. Even though he nearly scored in the dying minutes, I don't think any of us actually expected Palermo to play a single minute for us in that match.
Yeah. And of course, again, you know, September was definitely a whole lot of dark month for when it comes to football in Argentina. But then again, there was always light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to the other guys of what they're doing. And first of all was in the FIBA Americas, in which the basketball team qualified for the World Championship. But I guess the biggest highlight of that month when it comes to Argentina was none other than Del Potro winning the US Open.
Yeah, I remember the final was him and Roger Federer or Nadal. I forget. But actually, I forget who his opponent was. But I remember
Roger
watching
Federer.
The match. It was Roger Federer. Okay, yeah. I remember watching the match here. And I mean, normally tennis, I'm not a big fan of tennis, but I'll watch it if there's nothing else on. And to be honest, there was absolutely nothing else on TV, so I decided to watch. And he was, I forget, I think he was down by, how many sets was it that he was down? Two sets, I think? I'm not sure, but he wasn't doing too well in the match, I remember at first. I don't know, I could be wrong on this, but he wasn't doing too well early on in the match, and then he just came on and boom, turned on the switch and he beat Federer. And if you look at that, if you look after the match, not Federer, sorry, Del Potro had tears in his eyes, and you could see how much this really meant to him. And for a time where everything was going bad for Argentina, you're right, there was some light at the end of the tunnel.
And of course, another highlight for that month of September was the rugby team finally being given a chance to play in a very proper competition in which they will join the Southern Hemisphere rivals of South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, currently known as the Tri Nation. But of course, in 2012, it will be known as the Four Nation. A big breakthrough for them, considering how much they have achieved over the last 10 years. That's another highlight point in the month of September. So let's move on in October. What was there for us to look forward in October?
Well, October was, it was the last two World Cup qualifying matches. It was against Chile, it was against Uruguay, and all the hype leading up to the list being released was that Gonzalo Higuaín was finally going to get his chance with Argentina, and the list came out and there it was, but there was also the name of Martin Palermo as well. So heading into the match, it was, who's going to play with Messi up front? Is it going to be Palermo? Is it going to be Higuaín? Is it going to be Tevez, Agüero? No one knew. It started off Agüero and Messi. Sorry, Higuaín and Messi. Higuaín got his goal, and then, well, we all know what happened in the end.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was one game that really, you know, I can't really say that I was actually comfortable sitting and enjoying the game from start to beginning, because at that point, I guess, you know, you have to say that anything is possible. And when Peru scored that equalizer, you know for a fact, oh God, what's going to happen now?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I was confident heading into the match. We started off the match pretty strongly. I remember Perez getting a shot, I think 2 minutes into it. We started off good. We played good. We didn't finish our chances though, but you could see the positivity and the play was there. And then when Higuaín scored, it was like, all right, some of the pressure's off. We just need one more goal to really seal this match. And then the rain just started to go down, and the weird substitutions, and this and that, and I was like, "Oh God!" And I remember this was in right before Peru scored. I forget who shot it, and Romero just made a kick save, and the ball landed to Mascherano, and he made a weird move. He wasn't able to clear the ball. Paraguay crosses, the guy heads it in. It's a goal. It's 1-1. In the rain, and it was like, oh my God, this is actually going to happen. We're gonna head into Uruguay needing a victory and needing Chile to win and this and that. And then, everyone just pretty much went forward, and Palermo got his foot in. And I remember, I think for a split second, I was the biggest Palermo fan in the world. And it was a crazy moment if you're an Argentina fan.
Yeah, definitely. And you can't blame Palermo for that. I mean, he, of course, none of us wanted him to be there. We would have wanted someone else, but it was his luck. I mean, I guess the lady luck was just smiling on him.
Exactly. And I mean, I'll be lying if I sit here and tell you, oh no, I wanted Palermo to start the match and this and that. I didn't want Palermo anywhere near the team. I still don't want him anywhere near the team. Am I grateful for what he did against Peru? Definitely, of course. But that's it. For me, that should have been the end for Martin Palermo with the national team, but obviously when you score a big goal like that and Diego's in charge, that's not the end.
And of course, a few days later, it was all about the trip to Montevideo, in which a win will definitely secure our passage to South Africa. What was going through your head that time, prior to the game, during those few days?
To be honest, I was anxiety pretty much. I had trouble sleeping, I had trouble eating, I had trouble concentrating. All I thought about was the match, and I kept telling myself, okay, the match is a few days away, go do something productive. And I wasn't able to. I just kept thinking about it and thinking about it. And then I remember we did the podcast prior to the match, and even after that, it was like, I don't know, that entire week it was just all about Uruguay.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you. I mean, as much as I would like to keep myself busy or doing something else, it wasn't that easy. Even though it was quite an exciting week when there were so many football matches going on in World Cup qualifiers from other continents, but I have to say that it wasn't interested at me at all. I just couldn't watch any other game besides the fact that the only thing in my mind was the trip to Montevideo. And guess what? We actually came away with a win. Not a great one, but we got the result that we needed just to say that we're going to South Africa.
Exactly. And I think we were all surprised, not just because, this Argentina team defeated Uruguay. I think we're surprised that that Argentina defeated Uruguay at all. It had been, 37 years, I think, since we last beat Uruguay in Montevideo. So every sign heading into the match was all negative. You know, we haven't won there in a long, long time. This team is in bad shape. Maradona's the coach, he's the manager. So everything was pointing to failure, but it wasn't the case. I'll be honest, though, we got lucky with a few calls. Gabriel Ence should have been sent off. He did two ridiculous challenges. He should have been red carded. If he gets red carded, obviously the entire match changes. But he didn't. And it goes back to what Seba said. If there's one team in the world that could self-destruct, it's Uruguay. And he was right. On that day, Martin Caceres got red carded. They just, I don't know, if you watch the match, they never showed up at all. They won in midfield, but that was it.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised with the way Uruguay responded to that game because they too had every reason to qualify automatically to South Africa. But in the end, I guess it was all about us. We were the ones that had to say we're going to South Africa. And I can remember the happiness that was reflected not only in the podcast that we did after that, but of course reading all the comments and plus all the posts that was on Facebooks and various other websites. It was just about that. We're going to South Africa. And I can remember going to work the following day and some of my colleagues were asking me, you're going to South Africa, is it? they thought that I'm going to South Africa. They didn't know what the whole fuss was about.
Yeah, they didn't know it was about Argentina.
No, they didn't. So I had to explain to them.
I'm sure at the time you didn't mind at all explaining to them.
Oh, of course I didn't, because it was probably, you could say, in 2009, those were the happiest moments for fans of Argentina.
Yeah, and like I said at the beginning of this, year-end review type of thing, there was definitely a lot of lows, a lot of lows. And for this team to, to go through all that, to lose to Bolivia, to lose to Ecuador, to lose to Brazil, to lose to Paraguay, and to go to Uruguay of all places and to get the 3 points. Whether we like it or not, I mean, as much as we talk bad about this team, that shows character.
Yeah.
And that took guts by Argentina. And, my hat's off to the team.
Yeah. And of course, during the month of October and heading to the month of November, there were two important events that were taking place for Argentina. One was the Under-17 World Cup in Nigeria, and the other one was the friendly match against Spain, right?
Yeah. I remember, I think you and I were the only two people discussing the match against Colombia in the chat room, on Mundo's chat room. And I remember you telling me it was 2-0 for Argentina. I was like, nice. And so I decided to watch the match. I'm watching the match, I'm like, okay, you're doing good. Then Colombia scores, and it was 2-1. I was nervous. 2-2, and then 3-2 right at the dead. And that's hard. That really is heartbreaking. That was my second match that I watched of the tournament. And again, it goes back to Peckerman and everything that he did being washed down the drain.
Yeah, and for the record, this team was actually coached by Jose Luis Brown, who happens to be Batista's assistant in the Olympics. They started brightly, actually, when I watched them playing against Honduras in the first game, against Germany in the second game. I felt that, okay, there is something that this team has that we can actually look forward to, that I believe that maybe this could be the year that we finally get the only trophy that is missing from our cabinet, which is this Under-17 World Cup. Against Nigeria in the third game, well, I guess maybe it's the host, and they were fighting for their lives to stay in this competition. But nothing prepared me for what was going to happen in the match against Colombia. They just self-destruct just like that. And it was really sad and further much embarrassing to see the way we played that day.
Yeah, it was, and like you said, it goes back to the match against Nigeria, where it's the old saying, you don't want to face the host of the tournament, and that was very true right there. Then heading into Colombia, I really thought, I don't know if I wasn't over was overconfident that it was that it was Colombia and we're gonna beat them and everything, but at 2-0, I mean, come on, how could you let that lie? How could you let that lead slip? And it's a joke. It really is, and it's a problem with not only our youth team but our senior national team right now too. It's, I mean, there's no mental toughness on the team at all. And that again, ever since Diego left in '94, we've been missing that mentality. Are we getting it back? Maybe we beat Peru, we beat Uruguay, and everything. We did it the tough way. But with the youth side, it's just they showed no character whatsoever.
And of course, the saddest news that we heard on that month was Fernando Carqueiras, our defender from USA 94, who was shot in the head and is fighting for his life. Honestly, I haven't heard much about him or what has been going on since then. But on behalf of everybody in Mundo, we hope that he's doing all right. He's doing fine.
Well, I remember, I think it was around 2 weeks ago or so, 2 3 weeks ago, there was, believe it or not, it was a sports website here in Canada that they were giving an update on his health, and I was surprised to see that. They said that I don't know how he is now, but they said that he was still in intensive care, but I think he was doing better than he was before. I don't know. I didn't stay up to date with the information going on concerning him, but the last I heard, he was doing better than before. So I don't know.
And of course, the month of November ended with Messi claiming the Ballon d'Or, France football, which is actually the European Footballer of the Year. Well, I guess we all kind of knew that many months ago, right?
Yeah, I mean, I remember I didn't know that the list was actually, I knew the list was coming out that day, but I forgot, and I was out, and my friend calls me, and he told me congratulations, and I was like, for what? He said for Messi, and I thought to myself, I'm like, for Messi? I'm like, I don't get it. And he's like, he won the Ballon d'Or. I was like, oh my God, that's today. But yeah, I mean, we were expecting it. I didn't expect anyone else to win it. So it was good to see. You could tell he was really, really happy to receive it. And it's rare, and not rare, but it's crazy to think that he's the first Argentinian to win the award ever. I mean, obviously this award, what, it came out in '92, I think, '92, '93. So it wasn't around when Maradona was playing, but it's crazy after all these great players that we've had in the past 10, 15 years that he's the first one to win it for us.
And of course, the friendly match against Spain, that which we touched on it earlier. Of course, we did lose to the European champions, but we gave them a fight, and we didn't go down that easily, in my opinion.
No, a lot of people, and I think, well, I was one of them. I don't know about you. I was expecting to really to lose this match against Spain. I mean, lose hard, like 4-1 or 5-1. But and even with the not so good lineup, so to speak, by Diego, we still managed to put up a fight against Spain, and it was in Madrid as well. And I'm convinced that had the match been in Argentina, we probably would have been the ones walking away with the bragging rights, really. But to face Spain in Madrid against an A-plus Spanish side, where your team, is a B-minus C team, to only lose by one goal—that's pretty damn good.
And of course, another notable highlights for the month of November was you did mention about the new jersey was unveiled.
Yeah, the New Jersey. Okay, it looks like 1986, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely it does. I mean, it does have a lot of retro element in it.
Yeah, the AFA stripe, you could tell the blue behind it, or the blue around it. It I don't know, you look at it and you see 1986. It's and I don't know, I mean, I like it, I love it, I have no problem with it, and I'll probably buy one. Actually, I will buy one, But I don't know. I think they're pushing this whole 1986 thing a bit too far.
Yeah, and not to forget the Messi and Maradona's
Yeah.
hairstyle.
For those unaware, for those that missed it, late November there was, well, a few days after the jersey was revealed, there was this group of fans from Argentina that started a Facebook petition and what's it called, their own little website, and pretty much what they wanted was they wanted Messi to grow his hair, Afro style, like Diego had it in 1986, and they had a picture of Messi with the 1986 jersey with the Afro hair, and it was just I don't know. See, it's little things like that. It's funny, but at the same time, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It is ridiculous. I mean, that hairstyle may have suited well for Maradona, but I don't think so. It looked really good on Messi. I have to say that.
Yeah, and not to forget, I mean, when Maradona had it was the 80s. A
Yeah,
lot of
that's
crazy
right.
things.
Yeah,
Yeah, a lot
definitely.
of 80, a lot of crazy things happened in the 80s.
Yeah, and of course, we also got to know that Diego will be suspended for 2 months, for some reason that we all. Definitely, we wouldn't want to make that kind of statement on this podcast, don't we?
Yeah, no, but we're not going to repeat what he said, but there's no need in explaining it. We all know what he said. And to be honest, I'm surprised it was only 2 months. I really thought he'd be suspended for the entire World Cup tournament. But it wasn't suspended for 2 months, and it's pretty much a slap to the wrist by FIFA. 2 months, he's missing one match, so it's nothing.
Yep. And of course, finally, we head to the month of December, in which it's all about the match against Catalonia. But before that, we actually had one more important business to finish. That was the World Cup draw. We did a mock draw, and of course, it didn't turn out so good. But the real one was fantastic for us, right?
Yeah, the real one, out of all of the African teams, except for Algeria, I wouldn't mind to face Nigeria. So we got Nigeria, we're good there. We got Greece, it's tricky. South Korea could be tricky as well, but it could have been much, much worse for us. We could have drawn with France, or we could have drawn with Portugal, we could have drawn with Côte d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast. We could have drawn with Mexico, the United States. It could have been much, much worse. Definitely the mock draw was worse than the actual draw, like you said. But in some other groups in the mock draw, we came close. I know Group A was really close for us there, and we had Brazil and Cote d'Ivoire in the same group, no?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and our mock draw wasn't that off.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had a few groups that came close, but of course, Group A was almost, with the exception of France, it was more or less the same as we did it in our mock draw. And again, I think looking at this group, there is some reason to be optimistic. There is some reason to be not. The best part is that we are playing against all three teams that we had actually played in the past, and believe it or not, we have a 100% record against them. Of course, my only concern is when you talk about Nigeria playing on African continent, that does well worries me. But this is something that we will definitely talk about in the next 6 months to come.
The match against Nigeria, I mean, we're always going to get an African team, so it's going to be tough. No matter what, I guess. But if there's one team in our group that scares me, yeah, it's definitely Nigeria, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But we always get screwed one way or another. In 98 we had, I mean, let's face it, we had a really, really, really easy draw in 98, but the knockout rounds was just brutal. We had England and the Netherlands. Then if we would have beaten the Netherlands, we would have gotten Brazil, then France in the final. So it was tough, and this time around it's the same thing. Fairly easy group. Knockout round could be tricky. We could face South Africa or Mexico or France or Uruguay, and then we could face England or Germany in the quarters. So group stage is easy. Knockout is going to be extremely tough.
Yeah, and of course to cap things off for in December, it was all about Messi scoring a wonderful free kick in the Champions League, getting himself injured, and coming back just in time to win the FIFA Club World Cup for FC Barcelona. Of course, we did touch on that earlier in the podcast, so nothing much to say. It has been pretty much an exciting year, and of course, there's a lot of things that we would definitely want to forget, but we just can't. It's just part of our history as fans of Argentina, supporting the Argentina national team. So what's next, Roy? What can we look forward to in 2010? Besides the World Cup, and of course, besides the World Cup, I'm sure there's so many other things to talk about.
Yeah, besides the World Cup, it'll be interesting to see how some of these young players, Banega, Piatti, Pastore, how they do, you know, if they could get a spot on the World Cup team. We have a friendly against Germany, I think, coming up in March. That could be really important, and it will be an important match to see how we match up against them, and obviously the whole 2006 quarterfinals revenge, so to speak. Then before that, right before the World Cup, we're going to have three friendlies. One of which was rumored to be Israel. And then same thing as 86 and 99, we faced Israel before those two World Cups. And then another rumor was England. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how true that one is. But if we get England, you know, it could be a good test, see how we do against them. But that's pretty much it, aside from World Cup, see how the young kids do, if they can get a chance, and we have some meaningful friendlies coming up in 2010.
Yeah, and of course the first 6 months is going to be very exciting, considering that we'll never know that which other guy that is going to come out of the box and, you know, surprise every one of us, that exactly. For sure that we feel that for whatever he does at club level, he deserves a place in the national team. And of course, you know, I'm guessing that come May, when we do our, we might probably do a podcast after the lineup or the 23 players that will go to South Africa is being announced. For surely, I can guarantee that not everybody is going to be happy. Some name is going to be left out. Some name that I expected is going to be there.
Yeah, well, that's usually the same thing with. With every World Cup. I mean, you look at 2006, we're all obviously, you know, mad that Peckerman didn't take Zanetti. 2002, I remember Bielsa getting absolutely flamed for not taking Riquelme and Saviola. You know, 98, Passarella, he didn't take Caniggia, and Redondo, because of the long hair and the earrings and everything. So, I mean, no matter what, we're never going to be pleased 100%, but hopefully Diego could at least picked 90% of the right players, and not leave out huge names.
Yeah, well, the good thing for me is that I know for a fact that I won't be going anywhere during the month of June, because the World Cup, we're there in the World Cup, so I decided that okay, I will stay at home, because after the Paraguay game, to be honest, I was thinking about running away to somewhere like the US or maybe even Canada for that matter, where nobody gives that much attention about football and the World Cup, so I can stay away from all the hype about it.
Stay away from Canada, believe me. If there's no World Cup coverage, then if there's no World Cup coverage, there is, but it's pretty bad actually right now. They sold the rights to a different TV station, so we're gonna get less matches. But aside from that, the weather's horrible, so don't come here, believe me.
And of course, we also look forward to all the other Argentine athletes in whatever event they're going to take place. And I believe for you, Roy, the most important thing is going to be Team Canada in the Winter Olympics, right? Ice hockey?
Yeah, ice hockey Winter Olympics. It's in February. I'm probably going to get flamed by this. I know I have a few people here that go on Mundo, and I have them on Facebook, and I'm going to get killed, and I know I'm going to get killed. Sorry, guys. But I don't support Canada in the Winter Olympics, or not in hockey.
Hockey.
I don't. I support Russia.
Oh, I see.
Not Canada. I mean, I wouldn't mind if Canada won it. I wouldn't be pissed off at all. You know, they have a very solid team. But no, for me, I prefer Russia over Canada.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the clarification on that.
No problem.
Right. Okay. With that said, I guess it's pretty much a wrap for 2009, the Mundo Albi Celeste's podcast. I have to say that it was something that I enjoyed doing the most in Mundo Albi Celeste, because when I had the idea to do it back in December last year, I did propose it to Seba. And a few months later, we were working on what was the best way to actually do this. And It is probably the only place that I can say that I'm very much comfortable being myself, allowing me to express a lot of things easily. And of course, we had a lot of interesting people coming in particularly Johnny. We had Lucas, and who else that we had?
I think we had Rafael from
Uh-huh,
Brazil,
yeah, of
right?
course, Rafael. And we had
Yeah, we had
Martin.
Rafael. Yeah,
And
Martin. We.
Sam
Sam,
Kelly.
yeah.
Yeah.
Sam, yeah. From. What's his blog? I forget.
Higgs, I believe.
Yeah, that's it.
And
I think that's it.
of course we had Joel Richards on the other hand.
Yeah.
And
Well, I.
yeah, you were saying?
No, I was gonna say, I probably missed one or two podcasts here and there during the summer. Like, I wasn't able to get access, so I
No, that's
probably missed a
okay.
few guest hosts.
No, that's okay. I mean, you got a nice holiday. Well, most of us here were busy working.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good. It was good.
Yeah.
The weather was just horrible. It was, I mean, horrible because I took like 10 showers a day. It was like +40 degrees Celsius every day. It was really hot.
Yeah. And of course, another important name that we actually had in our podcast was Luis Scola. Probably the only celebrity that we had a chance to interview in the podcast. So that was another high point for us here doing this. And
Yeah.
of course, one more thing, Roy. So,
Yeah.
what did you actually wish from Santa Claus for this Christmas?
Let's just say I'm gonna see if my wish comes true in on July 11th. Let's put it that way.
Okay, I mean, we all know what is that.
Well,
Same
yeah, we
for.
all know what it is. We
Yeah,
all know what it is.
same goes for me. And so
Yeah.
any last words from you, Roy?
I mean, here's It was it's been a pleasure doing this, not only this podcast but all the other podcasts throughout this year. It's really been fun. Here's to another one in 2010. We're open to suggestion, guys. If you guys want to get on this podcast, just drop us an email. We'll post it on the blog. If you want to drop us suggestions, comments, everything. You know, if you don't want to send us an email, it's right there. Just comment on something, and we always read them. Don't worry about that. It's fun. You know, it's fun doing this podcast, getting able to talk about what we love. I guess that's about it. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it sucks that Seba is not around to do this one,
Yeah,
especially
definitely.
because it's such a big podcast. It's the whole year in review, but he's busy with other things, and. Say about this one's for you, buddy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we all miss him having here with us. And of course,
Yeah.
big thanks to all our readers, definitely, for all your support,
Yeah.
whether the comment, the good, the bad, you know, we accept everything and we enjoyed reading all of them. We love all your opinions. Yeah, you're saying?
Just keep the no, I was gonna say just keep the language to a minimum.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, you know, whatever misunderstanding or something that we did not disagree, I like to take this opportunity to apologize to everyone on my part. And like I said, you know, it was all for the love for the national team, nothing personal. I guess that's
Exactly.
the same thing. I will say that everyone will agree with me on this. And with that said, I'd like to take this opportunity to wish Seba and of course you, Roy, and every one of our readers who are celebrating a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year 2010.
Yeah, same here. If you're not Christian or you don't celebrate Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa Shana, happy everything, guys. Just happy holidays and be safe.
Yeah, definitely. And enjoy the turkey.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
That's pretty important too.
Yeah. Okay, guys. So thank you very much. And goodbye, 2009. Hello, 2010. And a big Vamos, Argentina.